It is Friday, October 21st, time for the Mincing Rascals. And once again, the chief mincer is out of the country. John Williams is gone. I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of the Business Lunch on WGN.
And I'm Krista McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
And I'm Eric Zorn.
Zorn.
Oh, come
on. The greatest father in all the land.
Zorn. We sing the praises of Zorn.
I see we're out of time.
That's my new theme song. Come on. What's not to like about it? It's from that Fox TV series.
I'm astonished.
It follows me everywhere.
I'm astonished.
Really, nothing should surprise you.
That's true.
But okay, so the Rascals are here. Williams isn't. The three of us are.
We'll
be joined soon by Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and Cardinal Dolan. But the debate, right, I guess that's the big talk and this notion of whether or not there will be a concession.
Well, I heard Kristen yesterday on WGN, fine radio station, saying she didn't think that was much of a big deal. So I wanted to throw the conversation to her first to explain why Trump's refusal to say that he would concede is not that big a deal.
Well, he will concede it. You know, he won't contest the election results if he wins. That's what he said. I just think it was kind of a silly question to start with. And I don't think that if he doesn't concede that it's going to be this, we're going to have chaos. As I said, we went through 2000 where we actually had hanging chads and 6 weeks without a president and someone who won the popular vote who ended up losing in Al Gore. I mean, if you felt like the system was not working in your favor and you were an Al Gore supporter, that would have been the moment. And we had a very peaceful transition.
Gore didn't really lose. They took it from him. But anyway.
my thought is this, is that obviously no candidate is going to concede in advance or say that I'm not going to challenge a race if it's so close that it needs a recount or there's some controversy. But what he is saying when he is not willing to abide by the results of the election is he's expressing a lack of faith in the integrity of the entire democratic process, the small d democratic process, in that elections are not to be trusted. You mean that's the message he's saying when he's saying he's not going to accept the results of those.
Lots of politicians say that. Lots of them do. And I think most Trump supporters, a vast majority, will understand that if he loses the election, it is because he lost support. The polls are tracking with that. So and they will probably right up to election day. So then are the polls rigged too? I just think it most of his supporters are going to understand that if he loses, it's because of all of the ridiculous things that he has said along the way, and especially the Access Hollywood tape where he saw the drop.
One of the most offensive things he has done in the past 6 or 8 years has been to question the legitimacy of President Obama, right? And although he ended it, as he said, and I think that's what this is about, too. This would be questioning the legitimacy of the next president, Hillary Clinton. And it's not about voter fraud at the polls. This goes way back to when he was running in the Republican primaries and he was supposed to sign a pledge that he wouldn't run as an independent, right? And he kept saying, if they treat me fair, if everyone is fair to me. I mean, this is a running theme with him. I don't think this has to do with voters in Philadelphia or Chicago, as he said. He could come out and say, the media was stacked against me. The infrastructure was stacked against me. I got gypped out of this election. And when he does that, he could take millions of people with him questioning her legitimacy. I think that's a danger.
That is going to happen. I mean, that is going to happen.
No, but that's not what Al Gore said. You know, the court ruled I lost. Some of his supporters, continue to fight it. But
Republicans fought Obama for 8 years. They're going to fight Hillary Clinton. And it's not going to be because of something that Donald Trump says on the way out the door.
They didn't question whether he should be president or belonged or deserved to be president.
I think you're in the weeds here. I'm not taking much stock in what Trump says this week because he says outrageous things all the time. There's no evidence that there is any widespread voter fraud, that is going to tilt the election nationally in his favor.
I really don't think he brings it up, but I don't think he's truly talking about the mechanical fake voting. I think he's going to blame the media or blame the Republican Party.
He's been doing that all along.
I know, but the question is whether on November 9th he'll say things were stacked against me, but the election was fair and square. I lost. Will he say they took it from us and we got to take our country back?
I know this is a broader point, but it gets to the issue that Trump doesn't know the right thing to say. when time comes for him to speak. And I'm referring to the fact that when you ask this question, you know, everybody in his campaign team, they were gathered around a monitor. When that question came from Chris Wallace, you know, they were all saying, come on, give the answer that Kellyanne Conway and Mike Pence and everyone has said, which
Ivanka.
Is, and Ivanka also, just say, I will accept the results of the election, which he did say in the first debate. I'll just accept it and move off that question, because the question was designed to bait him. The question was designed to make him seem like a nutcase, and it worked.
Do you think the
and
question
then gave, and then Chris Wallace threw him a lifeline. He said, like, you know, this is part of our tradition. I mean, he said, like, kind of a little bit of a warning. I'm not saying it was a partisan effort on his part, but he was like, he threw him a lifeline by asking the question again. And, you know, their heads were hitting the desk in Trump headquarters when that was going on, because you just got to say the right thing at
the
right time.
You think Chris Wallace was baiting him?
No, I said he threw him a lifeline. Well,
no, but
the
you
question,
said
the,
you,
yeah, the question, I mean, the question was a little bit of a bait. You would never. Who would ask Hillary Clinton that?
No, well, if Hillary Clinton had been on the campaign trail for 2 weeks saying that everything is rigged, that they're going to take it from us, then I think that's a legitimate question. Yeah. I don't think it was an unfair question.
No,
at all.
I don't think it was unfair, but it was certainly a question that was, it was inviting him to either give the right answer or an incendiary answer. And he gave the incendiary answer. I mean, he doesn't have the self-control to be president.
Okay, that's the debate. And then we move later in the week to New York City to the White Tide Affair, the Al Smith dinner, which is something I love the Correspondents' Dinner and all that stuff. And here we've got the candidates who are, it's a big fundraiser for Catholic Charities in New York. I think they raised $6 million or so. Al Smith, the first Catholic candidate for president in the U.S. And the two spoke. And it was a very, did you see, you did not see it, Kristen?
I didn't. I may have heard some clips, so I'm just going to listen to you talk about it for a little bit.
Eric, you watched. It was an uncomfortable night.
I did watch. Well, I mean, briefly, what happens is the candidates get up. It's a tradition for the political presidential candidates to go. And you give a short speech, and it's got jokes in it. Most of the jokes are supposed to be self-effacing. You're supposed to, you know, make fun of yourself,
right.
Tease yourself a little bit.
It's like a steam release for the campaign.
And there are examples over the years. Obama was really good at it. McCain was really funny. Romney was really funny 4 years ago. It's like you make fun of yourself a little bit, and it's a very lighthearted evening. Trump gets up. And he did deliver a couple of funny jokes. The best one, I think, was when he said, you know, the media is so biased against me. Michelle Obama goes out and gives a speech, and everybody says it's a great speech. My wife gives the exact same speech, and everybody criticizes
right.
her for it.
That was very funny.
That was very good. He had a couple of, but then his jokes turned very dark, you know, like Hillary Clinton's here trying to pretend she doesn't hate Catholics. Like, whoa,
right.
whoa. And he was getting booed in the room, and I was just flabbergasted that he was blowing this moment.
It was... So he had another funny line where he said, you know, Hillary Clinton is going to laugh a lot tonight, sometimes at appropriate moments, you know, which is good. But he then went into the campaign rhetoric about she's so crooked and she shouldn't be president, not even with joke lines to them, and then went into some of these jokes. And what's the guy's name? Bannon, right? It just seemed to me that this was a Breitbart script.
Right. Well, so the moment is set up for Hillary Clinton to really rise above this. She is primed to come in and rise above this. And she gets up, and her first line is like, well, I'm so glad that I was able to find time in my nap schedule to come to this. I mean, it's like, nice.
Donald Trump sent a car for me. It was a hearse.
Yeah. But then she, and she should have, like, faked a coughing fit and sat down, because the headline had been written, Trump was booed. But then she got into some really harsh jokes about him. And I just thought, she just did not read that moment well. I thought I obviously he was booed more than she was, but you know, the headline out of that event is both candidates are booed at the Al Smith dinner. Neither of them read the moment correctly.
I'm sorry, Kristen, but I'm so glad you said that, Eric, because I had the same. I wrote that to my brother. I think we were texting, you know, she should have ended it 5 minutes ago. And she had one joke that I thought really didn't belong, where she talked about the Statue of Liberty, and she said Donald Trump sees the Statue of Liberty and he thinks she's a three or thinks she's a four or something like that. And to me, if sexual abuse and oppression and all of that is such a terrible and horrific thing, I just don't think you can make a joke about it, too. And she did. And I think that shouldn't have been there.
I mean, is it just that they both lack comedic timing? That
well,
we've kind of been, Obama is so great at it, and he has really good writers. And obviously, in both cases, they didn't have good writers. They didn't seize the moment. And they both have terrible comedic timing. They don't. Neither one of them, I think, you could say has. You said the whole point is to be self-effacing. I don't know that either one of them has the ability to do that.
Well, it was not. It was just. It was a moment missed by both of them, but particularly by Hillary, since she followed him.
It's interesting you say that, because we've had talked about this before, this equivalence or whatever, because it wasn't close. He got booed. There were catcalls. I mean, in what he did was, I think, pretty clearly over the top. She had one or two jokes and didn't deliver some others. She missed a moment maybe by not sitting down, but she didn't offend the people who were there, and he did. I mean, it was not an equal sort of missed occasion.
Right. But
no,
but,
you don't agree?
Well, no. I mean, I think it wasn't equal, but she did not read the moment correctly. And in a way that it kind of surprised me that someone, I mean, these candidates both have lots of people around them who could write funny jokes, who can coach them on this. They could show old clips from these things. This is what the tone is. These are the people who did it well. And this, I mean, this goes back through, you know, back to JFK. I mean, they've been doing this not to have read that moment correctly and realize that there was a pretty big audience for it. It was on CNN, MSNBC. I watched it on C-SPAN.
I was watching
Kristen's
it on,
favorite channel.
I watched it on MSNBC, which Kristen won't be surprised to hear. And they had Minnesota Senator Al Franken sort of critiquing the jokes.
An objective critic. Sure.
Yeah. Well, he pointed out, he goes, look, I'm a Hillary person. But he said Trump is a funny guy. He's been with him, and he thinks he's a pretty funny guy. But he said something that I'd never thought of. He said he's never seen Donald Trump laugh. He said you see him smile. You see him breaking
smirk.
Your smile or smirk. But you never see an actual laugh. And I don't know what that means or if it's true, but I don't know that I have either.
I've
never seen you guys laugh.
Well, we're not funny.
Let's talk about something Kristen knows something about, since she didn't watch the Al Smith dinner.
Sorry.
So no.
What is
it,
that?
No,
you want to talk about the Cubs tickets?
Whatever you want to talk about.
Well, I just wondered if you guys thought that the fact that Chicago aldermen were getting Cubs tickets at face value was really a violation of their ethical code, or if it's just, you know, the way things work, it's tradition. You're a politician. You get to take these tickets.
It's Chicago. You got to get something.
No, wrong answer, Steve. Wrong answer.
So the ethics board is weighing in on this, right? And at first they said, well, you have to acknowledge publicly that you got them. So they're putting their names up on the scoreboard.
Tried to create a little loophole so that they could accept this gift, which they're not allowed to accept gifts over $50.
They're paying for the tickets.
They're paying face value, but that is a bargain compared to what they're actually worth. So I think if you were reporting it, you would actually have to report what it's worth. And so the board tried to create a loophole so that they could all go, as long as, you know, it was official business and they were introduced or something. And then there was an outcry over that. So then the board executive director came back and said, no, you can't go unless you're throwing out a first pitch or this or that. And to me, it's ridiculous. They shouldn't be taking these tickets. There are people waiting in line who are diehard Cubs fans who deserve these tickets. And just because you sit on the city council, you get first dibs.
You know, those diehard Cub fans who've been waiting for these tickets, there are going to be about seven of those at each of these games.
Right.
So, I mean, the 50 aldermen, that's just a small part of it.
I agree with Kristen on this. The fact that these aldermen often have to vote on things that have to do with Wrigley Field and development around Wrigley Field, it's a conflict of interest to offer them these tickets. They shouldn't do it. The Cubs shouldn't do it. The council members, the aldermen shouldn't accept them. And the ethics board should crack down on it.
The ethics board should be dissolved.
I mean, if this were to happen at the Tribune, I mean, we have a pretty strict ethics policy. If they were to say, oh, the Cubs are allowing you to buy tickets at face value because you're a columnist or because you're on the editorial board, we'd get fired if we accepted an offer like that.
Exactly.
I agree. But come on, it's Chicago.
No,
it's a couple of tickets.
No, let us be ornery about it.
There's got to be a little character. You print people.
Speaking of routine corruption and sleazy doings, Kristen, can you give us an introduction to this Project Veritas O'Keefe hidden video story?
So there have been this group that has done hidden videos in the past that have not necessarily been so credible. I did watch the video. I don't find it to be as alarming, even given my right-wing leanings, as some have suggested. But basically, this group went undercover and caught fringe groups from the Democratic National Committee admitting to doing some really dirty, rotten, thuggish things, like sending people into Trump rallies with the purpose of trying to incite violence, basically, and sometimes recruiting people they acknowledged were mentally unstable in order to do so. That was just one of many examples that they gave, and it sort of fed into this whole idea, especially the U of I C rally that got canceled here when Trump came to town. You had people on hidden camera admitting that they did it on purpose. And here we blamed all the Trump supporters that, you know, he creates this atmosphere of bringing out people who are super radical. Look at the super radical left. Take a look at those people who purposely went there to do it and took credit for it and were proud of it.
Well, both can be true. I mean, the fact that these people went to this rally wearing anti-Trump shirts and tried to engage in shouting matches and provoke violence.
They were trained. They went through training.
Well,
to
they
do this.
Said that. It's what's baffling to me about some of these videos is the way that these men who are in the videos, the inside Democrats, are bragging to people they don't even know. I mean, these hidden video things are striking because it's like these middle-aged men. I don't know who they're talking to because you don't see who's on the other side of the camera. But they're like, yeah, we did this. Like, to strangers, they're bragging about things that are unseemly. I mean, I'll go along with that. I don't think any laws were broken when you're talking about, you know, it's okay to go to a rally and try to provoke someone to punch you. But with your as long as you don't threaten to punch them first, you know, and you do have there is an ugly atmosphere at these rallies, and not all of them are from Democratic provocateurs. These are protesters. The big protest at the UIC was student led. It wasn't led by a bunch of people bussed in by the Democratic Party. I mean, so both I think are true here, but I just wonder if any of it's going to stick in this campaign.
Yeah, there's so much noise that I don't think that. But
so it's
Trump,
fine. So you're not outraged. If this were caught on hidden camera by Trump supporters, you too would be. This would just feed your whole storyline that, you know, his whole supporters, they're all hillbillies and they're radical and they are gun-toting racist buffoons. But because it's people who were working for the DNC and they got caught on tape, you're both like, it's okay. It's all right. We're going to look past it.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
No,
okay.
No.
Just making sure we're right about that.
Eric said there definitely were provocateurs and all of that. I think that's part of it. But I was going to say exactly what he said, that they can both be right. I mean, you can be wrong by trying to instigate it, but you can also be wrong by fueling the atmosphere that allows for those instigators to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, the Democrats didn't cause that guy at the Trump rally to throw a punch at an African-American guy being led out of a rally. I mean, like I say, when you know this is the case, and it's clear that protesters try to do this. They always try to do this, whether they're organized by the party or not. They try to get a rise out of people. The protesters here for the summit, they were trying to get the police to wail on them.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No.
No, I was just going to one last point, and then we can close this out. But I mean, both of these people were fired by the Democratic National Committee. They no longer have contracts. Bob Creamer no longer has a job doing this. So obviously, even the people within the DNC realize that they got caught and they are fired. Nobody is coming to their rescue and saying, it's no big deal. They lost their job. So obviously, it was a pretty. It was more serious.
Yeah, no, it was bad. I'm just saying that there's badness on. It's not like they went to a Trump rally of peaceful people and provoked them into something they would otherwise never do.
Do you accept our answer?
No, you don't have an answer. Your answer is just
no. It's they got caught doing politics.
I mean, know, but you're not outraged about it.
Steve's a puppet.
I'm a puppet. You're the puppet.
No,
I'm not a puppet.
No, maybe she's a puppet.
I'm the nasty woman. Can I be the nasty woman?
The nasty woman.
Are we gonna?
We'll
do
be the bad hombres.
Can we do
okay.
this? I don't want to be a bad hombre. Can we do the
bueno hombre?
the story about the family leave. Act, which I had no idea. So someone pick it up because it was a Tribune story.
It was actually going to be my recommendation for what to read, to go back and read. The Sun-Times, I think, had a story, too, and the Tribune about 911 dispatchers in the city of Chicago and how on any given day, 49% of them are not at work because they have called in based on family medical leave. And this is rampant throughout government. We've talked to Tom Dart about this with Cook County sheriffs personnel.
Yes, huge problem.
Half of the workforce are not coming to work. We're still paying them in some capacity, whether it's from the federal side or not. But family medical leave needs to be cleaned up at the congressional level. It is horribly abused. And this is a story just that lays out, you know, the questions about it. And this came out.
So really, though, yeah. But if I can interrupt, yeah. I did not realize that with the Federal Family and Medical Leave Act and blah, blah, whatever it is, I thought you always had to take like a chunk, like 6 weeks or 2 weeks at a time. And what's happening with the city is people are just calling up that day saying, I need to take an unpaid day off to visit my sick aunt.
Yes.
And that's allowable. I really did not know that was part of it.
Or because they have a migraine or something like that. Yeah, and it happens in the jail. Kristen mentioned the jail guards. This is this pattern that has been picked up by the media, which is like when there's a big fight, a big boxing match or a big football game. Absolutely. The use of family medical leave spikes at the jail. Perfectly legal for them to do that. And there's nothing that the supervisors can do other than hire other people to come in at overtime, which is why this is something that should be is concerning to everyone. If this were just like, well, we got to hire more people than we need.
It's more than concerning. It is outrageous.
Well, because
and these supervisors should. It isn't that their hands are tied. I mean, this came out during a budget hearing where you have department heads coming before city council members and trying to explain why they need X amount of money. And somebody managed to question what was the deal with this family medical leave problem. And the supervisor basically said, yes, it's a huge problem. We'll fix it. Fix it. It's just it's ridiculous to me that somehow we keep, you know, toting along and reporting out these stories and you don't have the mayor saying something. You know, change out your supervisor. Make sure you have doctor's notes. I don't know. There has to be something that can be done.
It seemed
right?
from the Tribune story that there also is a problem where these workers can't get scheduled days off. I mean, there was that implication that they
there
can't
was,
go and say,
yes.
We're too short of workers, so can I take Wednesday off? No, you can't. So instead they just call in with the medical leave.
What's always striking to me about this is how this kind of issue does not come up very often in the private sector. Like you don't see that at the Tribune where we're like looking around the newsroom going, half our people have taken the day off because they've got a headache.
I'm going to start using it now. I had no idea.
it's accessible to us. We can do it.
It is accessible to us, but we don't do it. You know,
I'm not going to be here next week, guys. Mincing rest.
Is this why? Okay, so we're all ending on agreement.
We'll all be FMLA next week.
No, I meant that we all think this is outrageous.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Although we should leave. I think John could talk on his own for 22 minutes.
Sure.
That would
be no problem.
All right, recommendations. Who's going to go first?
I'll go first. I'm going to recommend the hashtag Trump Book Report on Twitter, where people have gone to the voice of Donald Trump to offer tweet-length book reviews. I'm going to just read a couple of them here. Nobody respects Little Women better than me, but Beth dying, that's just weak. I like little women who don't die. Lolita, beautiful woman, phenomenal woman. In 10 years, I'll be dating her. That Humbert guy, so low energy. Sad.
And exclamation.
Gatsby, not that great. Believe me, I'll make Gatsby great again. A very funny hashtag. It'll make your day.
I was going to recommend the family medical leave article. So.
Oh, well, that's okay. I think
yeah,
you should.
That's it.
You have out-nerded us all.
Well, I'm going to recommend the family medical leave article. No, one of my favorite writers, a great guy named Simon Winchester, he wrote a book a few years ago called Atlantic, and he just kind of popped around different Atlantic countries or islands and told stories about them and sort of tried to weave that into a greater picture. And he has a new one out called Pacific, which is just the same, except this one is about the Pacific Ocean. So I think that's a pretty cool read and a nice way to sort of get a handle on the Obama pivot in the last 6 weeks of his administration.
I'd like to thank our engineer Bob Ferguson and for dropping in my theme song, our producer Kristen Decker, and also to acknowledge I'm exhausted. Just helping to moderate this podcast.
You did a great job.
The three of us together did it, but John Williams, he is a hero. He's an American hero doing this every week. He must, because this is so tiring. I'm going to go take a nap now.
And I think really the greatest gift we gave to Kristen was we didn't mention the Cubs at all.
Yeah, we did. The tickets to Alderman.
That's right, we did.
That's okay. You didn't sing the song. If you sing the song, I'm out of here.
I was gone last week. You don't like the song?
Who likes the song?
It
is infantile. It's like a nursery rhyme. It's terrible. Come up with a new song, please. If they get to the World Series, no self-respecting Cubs fan can sing that song. You just can't.
We could not possibly have ended on a note of agreement, so we had to end on that note.
You can tweet her at Statehouse Chick. That's the Mincing Rascals for this week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you!